Expanding Mind with Eric Davis, Thursdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind here on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Maza Dawu joining you guys today. Eric Davis will be out this week, but he'll be back next week. Don't you worry. Today we're going to be exploring the ever-expanding realm of consciousness through the kind of eyes of religious practices and some of the entailments of those and how far those can shift our consciousness and what they really mean. And I think for a lot of people, when we think of the word religion, they think of something in the past, some previously established dogma that has nothing to do with them. Really, literally, that they have to go and kind of observe. Like, religion is something you can go and see in a church, but that you're not really part of or incorporated in. And I think unless you're a fundamentalist or kind of mystic, it tends to be this past participle kind of activity that religion includes. And people have kind of a hard time integrating into their minds that religion is malleable and dynamic and changing and growing and evolving. And so sometimes folks have a little bit of a hard time opening their minds to newer religions that can pop up, right? Because if you're not, you know, if you're not Muhammad or Jesus or Buddha, how today could someone have some sort of insight about God that would be valid, right? We tend to think that everything about God and religion has already been discovered, that everyone's kind of, that the Bible is it, like that's the end, right? That's kaput, that no one else can have any sort of insight and can't grow from there. But there's a lot of different groups, even in Christianity, that continue to add things to the scope of religion, and especially in California, we have many different groups that are continuing to evolve and practice and change. And they get together and try and grow as a group to think about what is their religion, what do they think that means, and incorporate newer ideas and new experiences and growth. And, you know, Eric Davis, in his book, The Visionary State, really does a great job in outlining all the different groups in California that are really active in trying to open their minds to new experiences of religion and ecstasy and prayer and all of these things. And one of the groups that he mentions in the book, which I have grown very fond of, is the Aetherius Society. And even its name, I think, just opens the mind to other possibilities. But the Aetherius Society was founded by a fellow named George King. And there's a lot of different kind of dogmas involved in it that syncretize yoga and Christianity and the galaxy even, and extraterrestrials, and put them all together in an experiential practice. And I feel very lucky today we have Paul Nugent joining us, and he's one of the reverends of the Aetherius Society, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what it is they do and what they incorporate. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Roger, I'm doing very well. Thank you very much, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's my pleasure to have you on. Paul and I have known each other for a little while and, in fact, discovered that we were related to each other, as these synchronicities go, going back into Ireland. But, Paul, can you tell us a little bit about your involvement with the Aetherius Society and maybe how you were introduced to Aetherius and kind of
sure.
How you got started?
Sure. My involvement with the Aetherius Society goes back now actually for 25 years. And as you know, and as your listeners will readily pick up, you can tell that I'm English. I actually found the Aetherius Society in England a little over 25 years ago. And the Aetherius Society, I should say, was founded originally in England. Dr. George King, the founder, was English himself. He founded the organization in 1955 and brought it to America in 1959. But for my own involvement, I was 25 years ago in my mid-20s, and I, for a few years prior to that, had sort of, I was seeking, shall we say, spiritual answers. And that was mainly because I was on the one hand concerned about how we should be living our life. What are we to do with this wonderful gift that we all have called life? What's the right way to live it? The best way to live it? Mm. And at the same time, I couldn't help but think that most people don't seem terribly concerned with that, and certainly not at a political level.
Right.
The world was a mess. I mean, even 25 years ago, it's a mess. I'd say it's an even greater mess at this moment in time. And I'd say that a big reason for that is because we haven't, first of all, chosen to really try and understand what life actually is and the correct way to live it. And so for me, when I sort of began that quest, not knowing where else to turn, I actually read the four Gospels for the first time in my life, of my own choosing, without, having to do it at school. And I found in that, as far as I was concerned, here was somebody, of course, namely Jesus Christ, who did understand the true and correct way of actually enjoying and living this experience called life. And so that threw me into, I began, therefore, attending church. Actually, church has been in the news a little bit lately, Westminster Abbey, where, of course, William and Kate just got married. I went there for a year or two, and then I later went to another church, St. Martin's in the Fields in London. But, there are various sort of synchronicities in life, and at the same time, I was working in the wine trade, and my boss was studying Eastern philosophy at a school in London, had been for a number of years. And so through his conversations with him, I also began to attend that particular school. And was the first book that we studied was the Bhagavad Gita, which introduced me, to the likes of karma and reincarnation, which aren't, as you know, taught in Orthodox Christianity. But right. To me, they resonated. They seemed natural, instinctive laws. And so that drew me more also into Eastern mysticism. And then his secretary, there were only three of us working in this particular aspect of our company. Number one, she'd been to a place you may have heard of in the north of Scotland called Findhorn. Exactly. So I went there on a couple of occasions and loved it, which sort of introduced me much more to sort of New Age way of thinking. But she was also a member of this organization, the Aetherius Society. So I began to, check it out. Mm-hmm. And one, as I began by saying, I mean, what was very deep in me, what had resonated first of all, were the teachings of Christ. And in my present concern with the world at the time, I was saying, well, where is Christ now? I mean, where are the apostles now? Certainly in terms of reincarnation. And in this, trust me, I'm not trying to hint that there's any strong connection between myself or anybody in the Aetherius Society with that era, but I was looking for people who really are at a very deep, very pure level, have realized that life is incredibly serious on the one hand, and incredibly beautiful, you might say, on the other hand, with real purpose, and not the kind of purpose that is given to us by orthodoxy and by politicians and by the world as a whole. And the more I went into investigated the Aetherius Society, the more it made increasing sense to me. And one thing, just to sort of, I guess, finish this, that resonated particularly with me, I had to, cause me to take a few steps backwards, I'll admit, but their claim, and maybe we can talk about Dr. George King in a minute, but sure. Was that the founder, Dr. George King, who was a master of yoga, no question about it.
If you could tell people, I mean, he did yoga for what, like 8 hours a day, right?
8 hours a day over a 10-year period, that's right, on top of a full-time job. This was coming out of the Second World War, in which he'd been, he was a conscientious objector, didn't believe in killing, but at the same time he believed in service, he recognized Nazism was an evil force, shall we say. And so he served as a section leader in the fire service in London during the Blitz, and sort of saw absolute devastation and horror of innocent people being killed, which threw him into the study of yoga. But just to finish it for myself, my own involvement, what really sort of as Mahatma Gandhi said, what you can't reject, you must accept, or something like that. But Dr. George King, as a master of yoga, would go into a deep yogic samadhic trance, and beings from other worlds spoke through him. And one of these, and I know this is, you know, I mean, you've got to sort of examine this carefully, but one of these, we believe in the Aetherius Society, was Jesus. And I mean, mm-hmm. this very same Jesus that I'd encountered, you know, in the Bible from 2,000 years ago, but not somebody who's dead.
Right.
And he gave, on 12 consecutive Sundays in 1958, an incredible, a cosmic extension, you might say, to the Sermon on the Mount, which included these remarkable blessings to the Mother Earth, to the Sun, to the galaxy. And as I listen to these, because they're played, one of these transmissions is played during each of the morning Sunday services, as I listen to it with an open mind, and from a sort of heart and soul level, it resonated with me to the extent that I couldn't ignore it. It was profound. It was beautiful, and I guess most of all, it was relevant. It was really relevant to our world today.
And that's what's so interesting, and I love that that was your big connection. And in fact, I was just talking to my friend about this yesterday. How, you know, people think that the Messiah, as Jesus, just stopped when he died. I mean, I know they believe there's going to be a second coming, but that's not now. It's sometime in the future, and right now we're kind of like, you know, the apostles aren't here, like no one's here now, like how you were saying you were looking for, like, who are the apostles now?
Right. Who is really doing the serious work?
Right.
Who is doing the
right.
heavy lifting? And it's not on the front pages of your newspaper. It's not even on the back pages of your newspaper.
Right.
Not, but it is happening. If you, you know, Jesus said, seek and you will find. And if you seek with a pure heart and honest motive, those answers are to be found. Life is that beautiful, is, if you like, that perfect.
Yeah, and right now, and I was saying how in Judaism, you know, the Hasids, they believe that Messiah, or Messiah, as they call him, is incarnate in every generation and is always on the earth at some time,
in
you know,
sense,
in some form.
I would have to agree with that.
And it's not just like, you know, that we don't get connected. So I love that your connection was that George King was able to connect with Jesus in a contemporary way that was happening now.
But not for any random reason. I mean, here was someone, as we just sort of, you know, briefly touched on, someone who was able to raise the Kundalini, which I'm sure you're familiar with that. And again, you know, nothing sort of random about that. This was someone who did intense yogic practice, as he was saying, you know, up to 8 hours a day over a 10-year period, which caused him to be able to bring about a natural rise of the Kundalini at will, so that he could and would go into this state of cosmic consciousness. And it was with his ability to do that that he could be used, shall we say, as a very pure channel. Because another thing about that era of the sort of, we're talking about the early 1950s, really, well, the whole 1950s, that was the Cold War. And what sort of hallmarked the Cold War was the coming out of the Second World War, where, of course, the atom bomb, which ended the Pacific War. But then, you know, the Iron Curtain fell, and we had the Soviets and the Americans primarily, with the people like the Brits and the French, you know, tinkering around the edges, exploding atom bombs and later hydrogen bombs.
Right.
And in that year, 1958, that the 12 blessings were given, I mean, it was staggering to me when I learned this. It's staggering to learn that a hydrogen bomb is the equivalent of 1,000 atom bombs. But there were no less than 110 hydrogen bombs that were, shall we say, tested, in inverted commas.
Crazy.
Absolutely insanity. In 1958 alone, which was the equivalent of 110,000 atom bombs being tested on our world in 1 year alone. So we had gone insane. But more importantly, we threatened the whole existence on this planet. And during that period of the Cold War, the 1950s, what was very commonly cited were flying saucers. Of course, you had the, you know, in 1947, Kenneth Arnold, who saw a number of discs skipping across the skyline in Washington State, and he coined the phrase flying saucer. But they were very commonly seen, and you have to ask, why were they here and what was their message? And, you know, again, it comes kind of synchronicity dovetailing. Here was someone, Dr. George King, with the ability to go into a yogic somatic trance, who could telepathically receive this message. And it
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but people might think this sounds crazy, right? But if you look in the Bible, I mean, this is what the prophets were doing. Read Ezekiel, like how he saw the chariot, right? You read what happened.
Look at the Star of Bethlehem. I mean, we know now that it wasn't a star.
Right. Well, and these are common descriptions that are even in the Bible. So it's always shocking to me that, you know, Christians might have an aversion to that kind of ideology when really, I mean, this has been talked about even in biblical times.
Absolutely. And even before that, I mean, in the Sanskrit texts, they were referred to as Vimanas, flying celestial chariots.
And the rishis that come down. Yeah.
There's nothing new about them at all. And in fact, I mean, they're incredibly modern because, I mean, if you've sort of followed the internet and things, I mean, there have been a number of UFO sightings in Japan following the nuclear crisis at Fukushima.
What do you think about that? What's your take on, like, how there were sightings there specifically after the nuclear incident, kind of like how in the 50s, with, like you said, with all that? Do you think there's a relationship there?
Yes, I do. I think there's an absolute relationship. And, I mean, I'll go on just on the evidence of Dr. King and the Aetherius Society. Firstly, back in 1957, there was a massive nuclear meltdown in the old Soviet Union that in the days of that Cold War were completely kept quiet, and threatened the lives, I believe, of about 17 million people. And Dr. King took a transmission, literally out of the blue, from the master from whom we're named, a master called Aetherius, who we believe comes from Venus, but we're talking different level of dimension here, just as there are different levels of dimension around this planet, as there are around other planets. But it took a transmission from the master Aetherius saying that they were active, cleaning up radioactivity, as I say, that threatened the lives of 17 million people. Well, we published this because we have a journal called Cosmic Voice. We published it at the time, and of course nobody paid any attention to it, until 1976, when a Soviet dissident scientist called Zoris Medvedev defected to the West and spoke about it. And it was published, first of all, in a very sort of orthodox scientific magazine called The New Scientist in Britain.
Oh, right.
So we went and kind of knocked on their door and said, excuse me, but we actually published this in 1958. And they had to acknowledge that. And they actually did a follow-up article, it was titled Scooped by UFO. So that was one instance where they were active. More recently, most of your listeners will be familiar with Chernobyl.
Right.
And 5 hours before Chernobyl happened, Dr. King was contacted by another master who goes by the name of Mars Sector 6, telling us that to activate some of our spiritual radionic apparatus that sends energy out into the world, because something was due to happen. And we ran our spiritual energy radiators, as we call them, for the longest period they'd ever been run up until that point. And it was only 3 days later that the world, number one, learned of the accident at Chernobyl. But secondly, Pravda, which was the Soviet news agency, later came out and acknowledged that hundreds of eyewitnesses had seen a UFO over that nuclear plant. And the scientists were staggered that it had been, that it hadn't been a worse disaster, because the quote was that half of Europe would now be uninhabitable if it had gone as bad as it could have done. So
to put that in perspective, there was a release on the BBC that said, you know, that the Japanese prime minister said what happened at the plant left Chernobyl in the rearview mirror
some time ago.
So how did that, like, kind of feed into what happened in Japan?
Well, you see, whether we're aware of it or not, and by and large we're not, but I mean, coming back to, I suppose, God in a way and spirit, it's all absolute oneness. I mean, this is what the yogi has told us, and we can all have this experience of just seeing that God is right here. It's present. It's everywhere. I mean, we're like fish swimming in the water, sort of, you know, saying to each other, "Where's the water?" But it's just here. We're a part of it. It's all oneness. And as part of this oneness, we're in this. I mean, our philosophy is not unique to us at all. It's an ancient philosophy that all of this is going back to its initial creative source. You can call it evolution. And we ourselves are evolving. Our purpose on Earth in this life, each life, is to evolve. Is to come closer to that experience of cosmic consciousness, whereby we can bring that about at will. That is the natural state, and I would argue that it is the natural state. And these intelligence from other worlds, we are not alone in the universe. These more evolved, further down the line, if you like, spiritual beings, intelligences, we call them cosmic masters, from other worlds, are here to help us. And the Aetherius Society is cooperating with these masters in remarkable ways. But as I say, you won't find it in the newspaper. It's not there for shock and awe or anything like that. It's there because it's right action, I suppose.
Well, and it's true. And I mean, when you hear about this is kind of what's interesting to me in what you're describing. Mm-hmm. You know, like in the Bible, there'll be references of angels, and each angel has a planet affiliation, like Venus and Mars and things like that. And angels have a very positive kind of outlook in our society. But if you bring up extraterrestrials, there's this fear attached to them, like they're some kind of malevolent entity. So, I mean, you know, when you say these things, some people in their minds have that, well, how could extraterrestrials be helping with a nuclear situation? I mean, you and I know that there's connection, but to a lot of people, this is a foreign idea. Was this something Dr. King, like, kind of helped communicate?
That there are other beings on other worlds.
Well, that they have a positive influence.
Absolutely. Certainly, we would say within our own solar system. Our solar system is so small. Relative to this galaxy, it's so small. We are a sort of literal family.
Right.
And within our own solar system, and it's not to say that there aren't, malicious alien intelligences, but within our own solar system, they are to a certain extent our guardians, our protectors, act in a sort of parental way. But we have free will. Mankind chose free will. We have free will. But we have to exercise our free will rather than it being forced upon us. They can't do our own homework, if you like. We have to do our own homework to advance, and that makes common sense.
I mean, it makes sense to me, but I mean, I know. So it's interesting to me, though, that the Aetherius Society. I mean, out of many of the groups that I've seen, you guys really do, like, hold to the concept that there are these beings, and not just, like, in a separated way, but like you said, that you guys work with them, in a very active fashion. And so this is what's fascinating to me in terms of, like, incorporating that idea into your life and into your actions and having an interaction with them in a positive manner. Because a lot of folks, when they think about, like, involving themselves with extraterrestrial, you hear about abductions and all these kind of negative things.
But I love
that Aetherius Society mentions that, you know, these are conscious entities that you can participate with in a positive manner.
Right. It's funny you say that. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. And it's just a sort of element of our society, for whatever reason, that wants to put that twist and spin on it. And it's been exactly the same with another remarkable phenomenon, which, of course, is crop circles. And, you know, these remarkable things, and if for anybody who's paying attention, for anybody who's investigating these things, it's obvious that, okay, one or two, some are made by human beings, and they've got sort of more capable with what they can do. But if you really investigate it, there's no question that these are coming from a non-terrestrial source. But go out, you know, and ask most people, and they'll sort of say, oh, they're all being made by people, or I don't believe they're real, or whatever else. And it's just a quirk in the human psyche. We don't, in that sense, want to be open to the possibility that these remarkable things, be them extraterrestrial intelligences or crop circles, are profoundly real, profoundly beautiful, and have a profoundly important message for all of us. But that comes down to our own free will. Are we ready? Are we brave enough? Are we willing to challenge orthodoxy? Are we willing to investigate and incorporate these things into our own philosophical understanding of what life really is in a far greater way?
Well, and live with them, you know, like you said. And I mean, it does go back to even how you got interested in going to church, was like, how do I live my life?
And
there's a couple kinds of people that I think get involved in religion. I think this is a very broad statement, obviously, but some people get interested in religion to kind of relieve their
right.
guilt for the way they're acting.
Right.
And then other people do it to actually change the way they're acting.
Right.
And,
well, let's leave
try
that.
And, yes, exactly. So the fact that Aetherius Society is one of these groups which is attempting to actually, in this lifetime, every day, alter their actions and get involved with it and become conscious of it and broaden their awareness and broaden their consciousness. I mean,
that's
no small feat.
Thanks very much for your support, because it isn't any small feat. And you know, one of my favorite quotes was from another Eastern master I studied, Swami Vivekananda.
Mm-hmm.
Who you may be familiar with, who sort of came
course.
Over here for the Parliament of the World of Religions in 1893 and started the Vedanta Society here.
Right.
But, you know, one of his quotes, and as I say, I like it for this very reason. He says that lies go with the wind. Truth can go against the wind. Yeah, it is, because, you know, we are going against the wind of orthodoxy and debunkers and everybody. But you know what? The truth is a very, very, very propelling force, and it will keep you moving forward despite the obstacles. And all it ultimately does is make you stronger. And it's not to be adamant. It's not to be, I told you so about it, because the driving force behind it, if you like, is love, is a great universal love that manifests as service, just as spiritual service, which is what we do.
Well, that's wonderful. Paul, we're coming up on about halfway through, so we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be right back. We're going to hear some words from the Progressive Radio Network.
Sure.
So we'll be back with you in a few minutes.
Okay, Marja.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Source for all things progressive.
Today marks the beginning of a beautiful friendship, because the stronger my heart gets, the stronger my pen.
Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
South of the border.
Are you one of the millions caught up in that first world rat race? Well, I used to be. I'm John Mueller, host of the Expat Files, where we discuss what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire down in Latin America. Can you really live like a king down here on a crummy Social Security check? What about starting a business or buying a house or love and romance? Just tune in Monday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. and send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And to listen to any of my past shows, just go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives and click on the link to the Expat Files. Nos vemos.
I kiss the smile upon her face.
This is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Rachel Trachtenberg for Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination. This is a show for everyone from our perspective as teens. Current events, art as life, music, and politics. Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination
with co-host Julia Cumming.
Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Premiering in 1 week.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Maja Daou, and we're here talking about Jesus, aliens, and helping each other out with Paul Nugent from the Aetherius Society. Paul, one of the other things I've always really admired about the Aetherius Society is how it has that interfaith kind of importance set on it. I mean, some people would say, you know, okay, well, there's Jesus and Christianity, and then there's yoga, and that's Eastern, and then there's UFOs, and that's like this whole other thing, but that you guys are able to incorporate all of these things as really existing in reality all together is very inspirational to me. And I know you guys do a lot of actual interfaith events where you will like call together people from different religions and have them all get together and pray together. And I know one of those I participated in, which you're going to be having soon again, on Mount Baldy. Can you talk a little bit about some of your interfaith work and kind of how that...
Well, sure. In an early transmission, when I say early, I'm talking sometime in the late 1950s, from one of the cosmic masters, again, Mars Sector 6, he talks about cooperation will save you. And what he's saying is, he said, upon Earth, the forces of darkness are well organized, but the forces of light are not well organized. It's, you know, we're acting as individual groups and often sort of fighting within those groups and between those groups. And his message was, you know, cooperation. And there was another one about coexistence, which is essentially seeing the good in each other. And instead of focusing on the negativity in each other, see the good in each other. And that's right. A couple of years ago, I mean, we do number one in our teachings, in our practices, we embrace Christianity. Although Orthodox Christians might, you know, probably have to sort of question that to an extent, unless they investigated it, and I mean, unless they actually listened to these 12 blessings. And the 12 blessings is this wonderful practice of sending energy out to the world in a very cosmic kind of a way. So we embrace that, but we also do mantras. We recognize the Lord Buddha also as having been a great enlightened master who came to this world from another world. Sri Krishna the same thing, with the tenets of yoga. And so we practice mantra in our services. We also have prayer, meditation, pranayama, yoga, breathing exercises. So we do cover the gamut in that sense, only because there's truth in all of these things.
Well, that's really something, because a lot of people in these different factions that you guys reckon and join would think their truth is the only truth.
Right.
And there can't be truth in other places. So
right,
the fact that you guys can do that is wonderful.
Well, thank you. So one of the ways we believe that these masters are helping us in a positive, not just sort of cleaning up our radio, helping us clean up our radioactive mess, was between 1958 and 1961, they charged, by which I mean is they put energy into 19 mountains around the world. Incredible source of energy. I mean, there's needless to say, sort of more of a complex reason for them doing this. But the point, well, I guess the point in that sense is that we recognize that the Earth is a living being, and the Earth is going through a profound change. They spoke, again, in the late 50s and early 60s over the initiation of Earth, this thing that was due to take place, which we believe took place on July the 8th, 1964, when the Earth was given a tremendous infusion of energy, I mean, vast beyond our comprehension, an initiation. I mean, in her own way, like experience of cosmic consciousness, but just on an incredibly much higher level. And that is the real cause of the changes that are taking place on our planet at this time, because the vibrations of this planet are changing. They're quickening, they're heightening. We need to get with the program in that very spiritual cosmic sense. And to help us do that, as I say, between 1958 and 1961, they gave us a source of spiritual energy that we can use to tap into and send out to our world. And one of these mountains is Mount Baldy, which is close here to us in Los Angeles. And so since 1959, we've been going there for that very reason, to send the energy out to the world for upliftment, to help bring about peace, greater spiritual realization, etc. And so in 2009, that was our 50th anniversary.
Right.
And we thought, well, look, why don't we invite other groups to come and join us? And we did, and it was remarkably successful. I remember you were there. We had well over 200 people on the mountain.
There was a lot of folks there, yeah.
Most of them at 9,500 feet. And because it was so enjoyable and successful, we did it again last year, which again was a very successful event. And, so therefore we're doing it again this year. It'll be June the 25th.
And it's open to everyone, right?
Absolutely. We have imams from Muslim faith. We have Buddhist monks. We have Christians, Orthodox Christians, shall we say, but who are part of the interfaith movement, Sikhs, Brahma Kumaris, the whole bit. Everybody is welcome. Let's come together as the human race and celebrate. Well, number one, send out energy, prayer energy for peace in our world, but celebrate the earth, celebrate the life. And I'm just going to read a quote that I came across a couple of days ago by a Mayan elder.
Sure.
This is a Mayan elder earlier this year. He said, there is hope if the people of the light can come together and unite in some way. Go to the sacred places of the earth to pray for peace and have respect for the earth, which gives us our food, clothing, and shelter. We need to reactivate the energy of these sacred places. That is our work. And, that ties in totally with what this particular event is all about.
Well, and I can't even tell you, Paul, for me as an individual, even just in the city of Los Angeles,
right,
the different occult and esoteric groups, not even religions, like not even churches, but occult and esoteric groups that I have gone to, just individuals within those groups, how if I'll mention another occult or esoteric group that, I enjoy or I'm part of, just this judgment and separation receive from, they'll be like, oh, well, that group? Oh, well, never mind. So this idea of joining together, these different factions of light. I mean, we see it in so many different echelons, not just religion. I mean, if you look at science, how, you know, the anthropologist won't talk to the biologist, and the biologist won't talk to the physicist. And
yeah, it's daft.
There's no unification, and
it's It's daft.
You know?
But I think that I think it's bizarre and curious. In fact, last year we had a reporter from the LA Times who joined us on the mountain, and I think that what surprised him. One is that so many people came out for this event, but I think also that an organization as unorthodox and as unusual as the Aetherius Society should have been the organization that brought all of these groups together. And I think
I think it is
quite interesting in a way. The way I actually now see it, or one of the ways I see it, is I see it as a bit like the sort of final scene in Lord of the Rings, where whether you're an elf, whether you're a dwarf, whether you're a hobbit, whether you're a half human, whether you're an ent, you know, one of those the trees that got mad, we're mad, we're not taking it anymore, you know, and it's like all of them, the Wiccans, you know, are just we're coming out, we've had it, we want we want peace on our world, we realize that the system we have is broken. We want to find ways where we can cooperate, where we can work together. We want to build a better world. And it's a little bit, like that, really.
I couldn't agree more. You said that so well.
Because part of that is in a way, and I'll say it, but I mean, if you like, the Gandalf in this that has brought them together is the Aetherius Society. And I think the symbolism in that is important because we do embrace this whole new cosmic realization. I mean, I'm sure many of your listeners, this is, you know, progressive radio, sense that there's something profound that is coming. I would say there is this whole renaissance that is coming, but I think what it is a cosmic realization, which is why we're seeing UFOs, which is why we're having things like crop circles, because that is the next frontier for mankind, not to sort of go and put flags, you know, American flags or Russian flags or Chinese flags in the moon. I mean, it's not about flag waving, but it's about a spiritual awakening. It's about a realization that is coming to the human race, and it is profound, it is staggering, it is beautiful, and yet I would add, intuitively, we always knew it was there.
It's big. I mean, what you're talking about is literally, I mean, that's like what will break open everyone's head. I mean,
yes.
It's the elimination of segregation on
yes.
a way that exceeds the civil rights movement, exceeds nationalism.
Absolutely.
Exceeds everything, and you know, I mean... I come up against such resistance still, and you can see that people are really kind of being forced to integrate, if you can like say it like that,
mm-hmm.
which sounds so ridiculous. But I think the pressure and the momentum is building in
sure.
such a way, you know,
yeah.
like you say, like people are being forced to kind of get wind of the UFO activity, getting forced to like have this put in the front of their face.
Right.
And then they're like, they have to call into question, well, what is the truth? What is the right answer? Is it found in this one little pocket?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it, like you said, everywhere? Is
mm-hmm.
God everywhere and everything? And that's what I think is going to seriously extend people's conscious awareness is
right.
when that truth gets put so squarely in their face, unfortunately, through crisis. I mean,
absolutely, it is through crisis.
Yes.
And in fact, I mean, one of the first interfaith groups, in fact, the first interfaith group that sponsored our World Peace Pilgrimage in 2009 was the Parliament of the World Religions, or at least the local Southern California chapter of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the pilgrimage was a pre-Parliament event prior to the annual they gather every 5 years. They gathered in Melbourne, Australia. But the sort of byline for that Parliament was hearing each other and healing the earth. And I think that part of what you were just saying, but what we also need to realize, and what the Mayan was saying in that thing I read, is that we also need to get back and realize how we are abusing, have abused, this planet, which gives us our food, gives us our clothing, gives us our shelter. And we've lost that beautiful, natural relationship that we all rightfully have with our mother planet.
I think it's true, and I'd like to give the listeners, if you don't mind, just a kind of, like, practical, concrete example. So, like, if you could share, I mean, what did the local chapter, like, in L.A. at the Aetherius Society, what did you guys do when you found out about what happened in Japan? Like,
we released a massive amount of energy.
What did that entail? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, there are two things that we do, both of which actually are open to everybody. One thing that we do, have done now for over 30, since 1973, however many years that is, 36, 7 years, 8 years, is we store energy. We believe that, it's tangible. We all invoke energy. In fact, we invoke it all the time, but in one form or another, or one shade or another. And this particular mission that we call Operation Prayer Power, that is performed in various locations around the world, and certainly here in LA, is we have a team of, or a number of, a group of people, reciting mantra, Tibetan mantra. And you, at the same time, you have a person who is using a mudra that is picking up the energy that they are invoking and directing through the palms of their hands to the person who is praying. Because with their other hand, palm open, to send out energy through the psychic center in the palm of our hands, into a battery that is primarily filled with crystal.
And just to qualify this, you know, some people think crystals are New Age fluff, but crystals, in fact, are storage devices. I mean, they made up the first radios, you know, computers.
Exactly. They store
television.
Energy.
So it makes perfect sense to use
them as a battery.
They
store energy. Crystals, and, you know, good psychometrists will tell you that. But, yes,
that's
crystals
right.
Store energy. So what we're invoking, if you like, spiritual energy, love, through mantra and through the prayers that were given by Jesus in 1958 in the 12 blessings. And we do this each week. Just fill the battery, it takes about 2 hours each Thursday evening. We fill the battery with this spiritual energy. We invoke it and we store it. And then at various times, like situations at Fukushima and the, you know, not just Fukushima, I mean the whole devastated area of northeast Japan,
right,
we release it, but in a very concentrated way. So we might, you know, we release 500 hours of energy in 30 minutes or so. I mean, it's very concentrated. We've been doing this for over 30 years. The reason we keep doing it is because it works. We believe we've even stopped war with the power of prayer energy. So that's one way. Another way that the masters have helped us since 1955, one way I told you about was these 19 mountains around the world. Another way is through an extraterrestrial craft that comes into orbit of Earth at various times throughout the year, for a month or so. And it radiates energy that is magnetically or radionically enhances all spiritual action, whether the person is conscious of this satellite number 3, it's called, whether a person is conscious of that or not. But it's an ability to again help us help ourselves. And it's some of this energy that we use to help the situation, direct it to situations such as the Fukushima nuclear power plant accident.
Well, and I'd like to also qualify that just for the listeners who might not know. You guys aren't, it sounds to some people that aren't familiar with that concept of sending energy out.
Mm.
I mean, even churches will do that, right? When someone's sick, they'll send prayers to the person that's sick. But also, you know, the occult group, the Golden Dawn, would do that in World War II. And, you know, Dionne Fortune, who was a member of that, she actually formed the Brotherhood of Light. And, in fact, whenever there was, you know, Nazi activity, they would actually get together and do something very similar to what you guys are doing, and that is to concentrate the conscious energy they were sending out to the battle, like to actually, like, kind of ethereally, if you will, involve their consciousness in sending, you know, good vibes.
It sort of runs parallel to things like telepathy. I mean, we're all connected. Where the mind goes, there the energy goes. There's nothing. Another wonderful quote that I like from the Cosmic Masters, I mean, is God is the eternal simple. There's nothing. It's the unifying simplicity that it cannot get more simple. And so there is nothing essentially complicated about these things. They're all perfectly natural. But we tend to sort of make things complicated, and then we get confused.
I agree with that, certainly. if folks wanted to, say, participate in something like this, can you tell us a little bit about, like, where can people find a local Aetherius Society? Do you guys have chapters out? Or?
The obvious place to go, I mean, number one, I'll give you a phone number, which is 800-800-1354. Mm-hmm. Which anybody can call, obviously, but at least in the United States and I think Canada. But otherwise, go to our website, which is Aetherius, Aetherius.org, Aetherius.org, and that'll give you all the information. It'll also give you a link to our Interfaith World Peace Pilgrimage at Mount Baldy on June the 25th. So those are the obvious ways to get a hold of us. And yes, come and if you're curious, then come and investigate us. There's nothing to be afraid of. We have wonderful, incredible, fantastic knowledge. In fact, when I first came here in 1989 on a 3-week visit when Dr. King was still alive, he used to like to give visitors a tour of the property, and there's a room here on our property. There's various rooms. There's one where he would go into trance and take these cosmic transmissions, which were recorded for obvious reasons. He took over 500 of these cosmic transmissions throughout his lifetime. And needless to say, they were all, recorded, tape recorded on the best, possible equipment that the society could afford, which was, still, very high quality equipment. And these tapes, these transmissions are kept in various places. But a copy is kept here. And I remember he took me into the room. And as he opened the door, he said, "This is the greatest occult library in the world." Mm. And it's absolutely true. And I remember what I said. I said, "Money couldn't buy it." To which he replied, "It's not for sale." But come and investigate the Aetherius Society. And it is... there's another wonderful saying: truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah, that's and I'll be giving a tour also with you guys this summer.
July 31st.
Yes, that's right. That'll be in July. If folks want to, they are welcome to come along on that tour, which you can find out about on esotoric.com and also on my website, which is godismyboyfriend.com. And, yeah, I just, like you said, encourage folks to go check it out. And I remember the first time that I went to the Aetherius Society when you guys did a presentation of one of those recordings of, Dr. George King. I, like you, was really just struck by his voice and what he was saying. And it's like you mentioned when you went in, just the resonance of it. I can't tell people enough, even if they think it might sound kind of strange, just go and, listen to it and see what it is before, kind of placing some kind of judgment on it. And I really just think it's impossible to listen to his voice and not get something out of it, really. I mean, if you just hear the words that he's saying, like you said, it's mostly about love, about
love and service, cooperation, and what we really are. I mean, we're an aspect of God. We're evolving. We will go to the other planets. We will go to the far ends of this galaxy. Life is utterly, completely unlimited, or the opportunities. It is utterly unlimited, and yet we have placed, through orthodoxy and conditioning, such limitations upon ourselves that we don't think these things are possible. The truth could not be more opposite.
Well, and it's being shown so often, you know, it's so shocking. I mean, we laugh, but it's true. You're saying how we put limitations on it. I mean, new species of life are discovered all the time, even in our own ocean, you know, and just even that as a symbol of how infinite it is. My oldest daughter told me the other day, you know, she's 5 years old, and she said something that I thought was so profound. She said, "Mama, numbers never end, do they?"
Numbers.
Numbers never end.
Yeah, good thinking.
Just that idea, that just says it all right there. Like, everything is infinite in its possibilities.
The fact that Maja, like mother, like daughter.
I know, it's all my fault, I'm afraid. But yeah, just that concept that there is that infinity of possibilities, and why we keep putting limitations on, you know, what is truth, and it can only be Jesus, or it can only be Mantra.
That's why God gave us conscience. That's why God gave us conscience. But we have to listen to it. We have to act on it. Without the bravery and the courage to do it, we will still live within the confines of orthodoxy, dogma, and limitation. And it takes our own courage, conscience, to break out of it. But not
and that
to
really
do it
goes
through violence.
Back to that living it in your life, like you know,
absolutely
making it into what your actions are every day. Right? It's not just like knowing or reading the Bible. It's, you know, integrating that into your life. And I think when we can,
by
it's like
fruits
you said,
you shall know them.
Yes, exactly. Like, what are you doing? You know, so maybe if people can just even just do that, like in one day, think, what did I do today?
Right.
I mean, and I love that the Aetherius Society, and I think you as an individual, just pay attention to that, you know, and that's the best place to really start.
Right. And I think on that note, what you were just saying was not just what did I do for the world, but what did I also do for myself? And obviously not what did I do for myself in a selfish way, but what did I do for myself to grow, for myself to advance, to become more curious, to become more aware? Very important.
I mean, I think if everyone did that just once a day, we'd get a lot further along.
We would move forward.
That's right. Well, I just can't thank you enough for being on the show today, Paul. We're kind of winding down on time here, and is there anything else that you'd like to let people know about that the Aetherius Society is doing, or anything about your own? What do you have coming up? Is there any, besides the interfaith thing, is there anything important going on folks should know about?
Well, that's a good question, Maja. I mean, today being the 5th of May, Cinco de Mayo.
That's right.
Dr. King, he was first contacted on May the 8th, 1954.
Oh.
And so each May the 8th, or at least the closest Saturday to it, we always hold a special sort of commemoration service, and we'll be doing that here throughout the Aetherius Society worldwide this coming Saturday. So that's the next immediate thing that is on our horizon, celebrating that very significant date. At least, you know, actually not just for us, for the whole world. It's remarkable. I mean, that unique contact between a master of yoga. In deep yogic samadhic trance, being first contacted by an extraterrestrial intelligence, not with any personal message, but for a universal message for humanity at this critical time of profound change and transformation that is taking place for each and every one of us and for our planet.
Well, that's fantastic. Thanks for letting folks know about that. And what do you guys usually do? Do you play some of the George King material?
We will play Cosmic Transmission that he took, no doubt. There's mantra, there's prayers. We will maybe have an address. Somebody will give a talk. Maybe show a video. Different things that make up that kind of service. But yeah, we have regular weekly service. Otherwise, come on a Sunday morning at 11 a.m. You will hear one of the 12 blessings. You will hear, it's our belief, the voice of Jesus in 1958 speaking through Dr. George King. It turned my head, turned my ears. When I was, to all intents and purposes, an Orthodox Christian, but I couldn't deny it, as I was saying earlier. Profound truth. Blessings to the Son, to the Supreme Lords of Karma. To the galaxy. This is the future. This is the new awareness that is coming to us all. So that's something
that's
else
so great.
People do.
Well, thank you so much again.
Thank
Paul,
you, Marcia. I was lucky to have you on your own. But that having been said, I missed not having the chance to talk also with Eric.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. Thanks again.
Thank you,
from
Marcia.
All of us here.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Keep your minds open.